Hi.
Hi, we had snow.
Really? Cool.
For the first time this year.
Congratulations, I guess. Is that the thing that we say?
It depends. We have a car, so no.
Commiserations. But you have snow tires, right? Like everyone in Norway has snow tires.
Well, yeah, we have. there's a joke, actually, because snow tires in Norwegian is pig deck.
Okay.
And there's this joke. I don't remember the pretense, but it's like the punchline is, I have pigs in my decks.
Is that literally the punchline? Like,
yeah.
Wow. That's totally random.
That's pretty random. Do you have snow yet?
We have no snow. Can we expect snow? Like, normally we're getting your weather like a day later, right? So...
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. I love snow.
Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year. Gott nytt år.
We made it.
We did. It was close. My neighbors are drilling. I don't know if you can hear.
we'll fix that in post, I guess.
Cool.
We'll try.
They're big fans of very intermittent DIY, especially in the evenings. 10:30 is a great time to drill, apparently. And when I say drill, I really mean drill. This is not a euphemism. Actual drilling.
What are they building in there?
Nobody knows. It's like I think it's just the thing that they do. Like, we sit down of an evening and we watch Netflix, they drill.
So for how long has this been going on?
I couldn't say. Wait, yeah. You mean like in time and history or like today?
Like your neighbor. Yeah, in time and history. Do they have a history of drilling?
Pretty much as long as we've lived here, which is to say about 4 months. But like it's because it's an apartment block, right? There's always someone drilling, but you can't tell where it is. There was one night when it was like 11:30 at night and there was kind of banging and DIY and drilling noises. And I went to look around to try and find the apartment to say, hi, it's a little bit late. Would you just, you know, turn it down a little bit? And I couldn't find them. Like, literally wherever I went in the building, there was nothing. It was peaceful, but you could just hear it. It was kind of resonating up the stairwell.
I guess we have to do an episode on Norwegians and their everlasting fascination with DIY and interior design.
We should totally do that. And actually, we could have another episode that's just about drilling. Like, the amount of drilling that happens in this country is... There are no words.
Some of us try to drill less. Also in the oceans, but yeah. Some of us. We have to sort of find something else to do. Soon.
I guess you've got to channel your like creative energies into something, but in Norway mostly it seems to be there's a really perfectly good mountain here, let's make a hole in it. And let's not just make a hole, let's go right through.
Right, we have follow-up. There's an exciting item on the list.
Which one's that?
You made some meat, finally.
We did, we made pinnechet. It was... well, very easy, as I think we talked about before. You buy some, it's quite random from a British point of view, I guess. You don't just like steam it. You go and you buy a little packet of wooden sticks, like a small Jenga, and you play Jenga inside a saucepan and you put the meat on the top of the saucepan and then you fill a little bit of water in and you steam it for 3 hours and the meat is ready. And it was great. It was super tasty. I pulled my husband about it as well. I sort of asked him, you know, like what he thought. Would he have it again? And broadly, yes. He didn't like the fact that it was kind of an anatomy lesson, like to, you know, to kind of get the meat off the bone. Like you've got to do a little bit of fiddling around, right, with sort of the bits that aren't meat. But It was great. It was super tasty. A+ would finish it again.
Yeah, because the whole thing is you cook the meat on the actual rib bones, and they are pretty long, right? So, yeah. Cool. I actually discovered sort of Pinochet, advanced Pinochet cooking method. So you mentioned like the birch sticks that you put in the bottom of the pan, right? I actually found out that you can exchange them with potatoes. So you can put the potatoes on the bottom.
Okay.
And the meat.
I'm not sure I'm ready for this, but let's hear it.
And the potatoes will be ready for eating afterwards. No. I think that would be messy. So with the skin on. I think so.
No.
But you have to use a certain type of potatoes. Those who are sort of more firmer, I guess.
Do you peel them?
With the fracking almonds, because we would use what we would call almond.
They would
potatoes,
collapse, right?
Mandelpoteter. Though I think they have more starch, so they are sort of more...
Okay, the waxy
firm
ones, right? Not the ones that just kind of collapse.
So then will not fall apart so easily.
What's different about those?
I didn't even mention the final thing.
That sounds good. Another time we should talk about furikul, which is kind of the same thing, but with cabbage, right? There's more.
The top of the iceberg or the bottom of the pan, you can instead of water, you can actually use beer.
This changes everything. Amazing.
So next Christmas.
We don't even have to wait that long. Mm. Half the packet is left. It's in the freezer.
Yeah. You should try it. Take one for the team.
Beer Pinochet coming up this weekend. Mm. Mm. Awesome. Mm. Oh, that sounds amazing.
The whole package.
I think we've talked about this food like literally every episode so far.
There are some recurring themes, I guess.
This is a very specific seasonal one. I guess we should move on to other differently seasonal food every time.
Speaking of dinner, and alleged Norwegian idiosyncrasies. This is one I forget to practice the terms on the list, but
idiosyncrasies.
Yeah. rabbit hole. But yeah, you also made a discovery, or a listener made a good discovery for us about the dinner for one thing.
Right. You want to talk about that?
Well, we are not alone in our strange television Christmas watching behavior. The Germans are
edited it.
The Germans are in on it as well. Yeah, so it's a thing in Germany as well.
Yeah, thank you, Ellis Pratt, who brought this to our attention. Yeah, it's fascinating. I didn't know that they liked it. Then I didn't know that they liked it here either. So it's just.
But who did it first?
Well, it was British first, I guess. So I guess we liked it enough to export it. Or is it like beer, where you export the stuff you don't like?
I think it was more like you made it, you forgot about it, and we sort of picked it up.
Hmm. That's how cult stuff starts, though, right? Cool. Ellis had a ton of other feedback for us as well, some of which will be featured in future episodes. Thank you, Ellis. He also talked about, he signed off as, I think, Gruntled of Tunbridge Wells, which, yeah, this is a weird British thing. I'm going to Britsplain for a moment, if I may. So, classically, in the UK, if you are very, very passionate and annoyed about something, then traditionally you would write to the newspapers to complain, to express your outrage, right? And there's stuff on the Wikipedia page about the origin of this, but if you sort of, if one finds oneself on a kind of a rant about something, and then you can kind of finish, sign off, type, disgusted Tunbridge Wells. And Tunbridge Wells is a town in Kent. Kent is sort of relatively well-heeled. It's in the southeast of England. It's kind of a little bit posh, and it's the kind of place where someone would write, "Sir, I'm writing to you to express my disgust at blah, blah, blah," and sign off. And so disgusted of Tunbridge Wells, or disgruntled of Tunbridge Wells, has become a thing. Ellis actually signed himself off as Gruntled, so I assume that means he likes the show. Anyway, the link's in the show notes for those still perplexed.
So, if you sign off as Disgruntled, you are sort of not a fan, but if you're Gruntled, which I have no idea what that means.
I don't think it's a word. I don't know how one could become Gruntled. I think it's nice that Ellis is Gruntled. I don't know what it is, but it sounds good.
It sounds like a word. It is a word now.
Totally. Gruntled.
Right. We could easily do a follow-up episode because there's so much to unpack.
There is. Can I ask you about marzipan pigs, please?
Okay.
They're everywhere. What gives?
Do you have them in the UK?
I don't think so. Marzipan, yes, though not as much as you do here, but like suddenly it's Christmas, New Year, there's marzipan pigs everywhere. I mean, not literally everywhere. I'm not walking down the street and there's pigs. But in the shops.
I think this will be in the category that things that just are, and I have no idea where they come from.
Okay. It is broadly a Christmas thing, though, right?
It's a Christmas thing. Yeah, absolutely. Marzipan would be a holiday thing. Because we have marzipan for Easter as well. But not the pigs. So the pigs would be for Christmas. So I guess Christmas is it's a pig's holiday.
If you were to draw a Venn diagram of Christmas, right? Like almonds and pork. They're in the middle.
Yeah, it's weird that we haven't mixed those two yet. At least that's not as far as I know. So it's definitely perhaps it's something Christians do to distinguish themselves from the Jewish. It's not exactly kosher,
I guess.
Perhaps like the altruism of small differences, or the narcissism. Freudian slip.
Marzipan has small differences.
Right. So yeah, and marzipan pigs are commonly used as a prize. Ah, there we have the connection. So if you find the almond in the porridge, you'll get a marzipan pig.
Oh, is that the prize?
That's the prize.
Nice. If anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to the Christmas episode. Maybe the one before Christmas.
The Christmas episodes, perhaps.
Yes, plural. Yeah. Yes, we have two.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We can move on. I was just curious.
Now something completely different. Did you listen to the Emperor album?
Prometheus,
The Discipline of Fire and the Mice.
I did.
Yeah.
So to backtrack, this is speed metal. Speed metal? Black metal? Both?
This is like a whole, its own discipline, how to place a metal group in its correct subgenre.
Okay.
It's impossible, I guess. But I think you could be safe to say it's probably within black metal somewhere.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess speed metal wouldn't be a far-fetched. I'm not sure. So, yeah.
Mm.
Any favourites?
None that I could name. I did honestly listen to it. My takeaway was that it would be better if the guy wasn't quote-unquote singing. I'm I like the rest of it. It's not my bag. Like, if I was going to listen to something that was kind of heavy and vaguely symphonic, I might listen to Muse, which is not that heavy. I would probably listen to Nine Inch Nails, which is more kind of down the industrial route. I got my head, but my head is unraveling. Right? I like that. I think it was the manner of the singing that I didn't care for. The stuff underneath is great. Like, these are clearly people who listened to a lot of Bach growing up. Like, there's a lot of really interesting kind of mathsy, patterny stuff going on under there, and I really quite like that, but I couldn't describe what was layered over the top of that as singing. I think that's where I would draw the line. So musically, yes, but something about the execution of it, I guess that's a good word to use, given it's black metal, I don't know, death, something, something. But, yeah. Am I missing something? Like, does it reward sort of repeat listening?
I think perhaps I should make up a curricula of black metal where you can sort of get accustomed to the vocalizing or the singing as you want.
Vocalizing seems like a more honest word.
Because for most people, it's that's the deal breaker, right? As I don't like the screaming and that stuff. But I think you can get accustomed to it. I think so.
Okay.
How else should you express the deep pain and suffering of the Nordic soul if you couldn't scream it aloud in a microphone?
I think in a way actual screaming would be preferable. Like, just one
To be honest, you mentioned Muse, right? I'm the biggest Muse fan, but I'm pretty goddamn tired of Matthew Bellamy's wailing on yet another album in the same way, on the same chords.
It's a bit too much of it is a bit kind of bombastic, and it is, they do repeat themselves quite a lot. So I'll give you that.
At least Coldplay try to renew themselves.
Are we allowed to like Coldplay on this show? I'm not even sure.
I don't think so.
Yeah, we can edit this bit out after.
Because it's now it's cool to not like Coldplay?
I think so. I think we've been in the Coldplay backlash for a period. I'm not sure what happens at some point. Presumably they become cool again or retro. I don't know how that works.
I saw that John Oliver show and he doesn't like Coldplay, so I'm not sure anymore.
Should we start a counter movement? Make Coldplay great again?
Or we like Coldplay, but only the later stuff.
That's very controversial. This is not a music podcast. Honestly.
Not?
It could be.
It could be.
There's like three people left listening at this point. It's fine.
The court jester. The court jester.
Yeah. I had another think about movies of the kind that you would watch at Christmas. They're a little bit old school and kind of fun. And this is in no way connected to Christmas. It's just the kind of thing that you would find on Christmas. This is a movie from the 1950s with Danny Kaye in it. And it is really silly, but also really fun. And there's a clip on YouTube that will stick in the notes, which is great. You can like stop after the first two-thirds of the clip. It's kind of an inverse... what's that thing called where you only need to watch the second two-thirds of a video? Yeah, okay, the link for that is going in the show notes. Yeah. I can't remember the name. Just watch the first two-thirds. It's great. It's funny, it's silly, it's made... The kind of the costumes are weirdly similar to the ones in Askapot, actually, which was one of the things that made me think of it, I guess. But it's exactly the kind of charming, old-fashioned thing that should go on at Christmas. So that's why that's in the show notes.
Do we have them anymore, the court jesters?
I think we just have politicians now.
But don't you have this royal this like TV show where there are someone from the royal family is there and there are like music bits and sketches and stuff like that? Isn't this a Christmas thing?
Is the thing that you're talking about the Royal Variety Performance or something
exactly.
like that?
Yeah, that's one.
I don't know if that still exists. It was totally a thing when I was a kid. I have no idea if it's still on television. I have no idea if anyone would still watch it on television. Plausibly?
I think I oversaw it on... I think they even send it on Norwegian television.
Okay.
And I think it was in the background at some Christmas party.
Okay.
With some, I think, new famous people. So I guess it's still... You do have the monarchy still, right?
Yeah, that's another episode, right? Yeah, that's what, yeah, don't let's go down that rabbit hole. That's that's not for today. But yeah, we still have them.
I actually saw our King's Speech, and I was honestly moved, which surprised me and made me felt confused. Because I'm not really a monarchist, but sometimes I am, apparently.
Me neither, but your king is really cool.
He's pretty down to earth. Yeah.
He is. His wife is as well. They're both super cool. This is so not the monarchy episode, or if it is, we're so not prepared for it. But yeah, they're pretty cool. And no, not a monarchist here either.
Is this something you say just to sort of make it easier for you to be integrated?
No, genuinely. The first since we moved here, the first exposure that I had to them was a transcript of a speech that someone tweeted. He'd given a speech, and it was super liberal and really thoughtful and really inclusive and really political in a way that you would just not get the royal family in the UK ever being. It was extraordinarily political. The guy's a dude.
Yeah, and his New Year's speech was something in the same vein as that speech you talk about. So he made it around. So they had a wishing tree in the I Slottsparken, the park behind the castle. Is it the castle?
Castle or palace?
Yeah, palace garden.
I saw it.
Where people could sort of hang up notes and wishes.
Like,
so he
like
made
the Japanese one, right?
Yeah, the Emma tablets, actually. But there you write your wishes to the kami, or the gods, if you want. But kami is a much broader term than god, so yeah. Former scholar of religion. Oh, all right. Anyways, Northern English regional accents.
Right. This is just a quickie. This is something we can put in the show notes. But we talked a little bit about the kind of narcissism of small differences stuff and the boggling variety of accents that occurs in, say, the north of England, in Yorkshire and Lancashire, for example. And right after that came a sort of interesting thread on Twitter. So we'll put a link to that. And if you follow the links, or at least one of the links in the thread, you can hear a recording of someone and you can read the comments in the thread about the confusion that we had about where was this person from, which, by the way, probably no more than 20 or 30 miles in either direction, but it was a pretty heated debate about where this person was from.
Is it considered sort of a feat to if you as a person can sort of pin down where a person come from by just listening to their accent or dialect?
It would be for me, but I'm a hella nerd.
Yeah,
so
this is actually some. It's a bit of a dad thing to do. But in Norway, it's not that uncommon that you sort of are proud of your ability to pin down the small township where this person comes from, even if their dialect is watered down.
How far do you have to go from your hometown, particularly I'm thinking the West Coast, actually, like before you rock up in another little town and you think, oh, these people don't sound like us? Like in kilometers, how far?
I would not be lying if I said like two.
Whoa. So,
because on the island where I lived most of my years, if you went from where I lived to sort of the next little town, and I don't think it's more than 2 kilometers, they sound pretty different.
Wow.
To us, perhaps not to you, but yeah. You would know it instantly.
Wow. I'm thinking of a friend of mine who's from Cape Breton in Canada. And I hope I'm getting that right. I think it's Cape Breton Island. And it has this weird mix of people from Scotland and people from France. And you can drive not very far at all and you suddenly hit a Scottish bit where people speak Gaelic and all the names are different. And then you go around the corner and you're in a French bit. Which is, I guess, the only more extreme example I can think of. Link to that in the show notes.
Now I'm thinking, should we try to do these accents? Perhaps not. But is that considered a sort of a rude thing to attempt to do that in the UK?
I don't know that it's a rude thing to attempt. I think where you run into trouble is it can go really badly wrong and you think you're doing a brilliant job and people who are from there are like, oh, dude, no. In the way that my husband, who's English, cannot do a Scottish accent, and every time he tries, I'm like, please stop, just stop, please, please, you're killing me here.
Because they overdo it, right?
Yeah, or they just, it just lacks so many nuances. Also, Americans doing British accents or trying to do British accents. It's often excruciatingly painful. Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins, I guess, would be the kind of classic example.
But who does it best?
You mean like which nation or?
Which American does the UK, one of the UK accents best?
Slight cop-out answer, anyone who's kind of doing a generically slightly posh British accent, like Gwyneth Paltrow is very good at English accents. I'm trying to think, there's other actors where I've only later found out.
Her name is Gwyneth.
Yeah.
I guess.
One British parent? I can't even... Yeah, but like then we're going down a whole thing of people in the UK, the US going, oh, but I'm like one quarter Scottish or whatever. And, you know, like everybody's from somewhere else.
Yeah. But can we compare? I don't know how much you know about Norwegians' relationship with Swedish, but I guess you have got some hints here and there.
I have a couple of ideas.
Complicated sibling-ish thing. Do you have the same with the Americans? Or is it more...
My pillow fort just fell down.
Yeah, you deal with it.
I made a super good pillow fort as well, but yeah, I will. Right back. Where were we?
You and the Americans. Short derail. Would the Americans be your closest sort of cultural neighbor to compare yourself to?
Yeah, this is a really hard one, actually. I would say that they're too foreign. So you can't have that sibling... Well, you can have that kind of sibling relationship, but they're, I think, a lot of what is perceived as American culture in the UK is just too foreign. Like it's too different to feel like a sibling. So we have a slightly different relationship. The sibling relationship is probably Scotland, England, or something similar, right?
Exactly, because I guess the countries within the Great Britain or United Kingdom or what have you.
Nations is usually the preferred term.
Yeah, the nations would perhaps be more comparable with Scandinavia, right? Like close cultures, almost the same, but not.
Pretty much, I think, yeah.
I guess we have to investigate that on a later episode.
I guess so.
There's a lot of stuff back there. So we have a topic for this episode, actually.
Incredibly.
Outdoor sportsing.
You said.
Yeah. So I guess it's no surprise that much in Norway is about the outdoors and nature. I guess that's our brand, in a way, at least in the tourist industry.
I guess so. You have all the physical geography, right, which is super impressive. But then you also have the ratio of kind of land to people is just huge, right? Like, there's so much Norway and so few people.
And not to mention the war, but if you want Lebensraum, you pretty much got it in Norway. I guess we have if you sort of take the if you sort of take the number of people and divide it on the square foot of the geographical area of Norway, you will have a lot of space.
Yeah, actually, that's the thing that I notice about people in Oslo, who you'd think would be used to having a little bit less space than the rest of the country. Mm. Have I mentioned this before? They're, like, not very good at avoiding each other. Like, their sense of personal space is a bit clunky. It's very easy to have someone almost run into you, or they walk right past you in a way that would be inconceivable anywhere else that wasn't, like, a big, sort of big city like London or Berlin or somewhere. It's kind of weird.
And I guess in New York, you walk into people from decisiveness, I guess, because this is your road and you'll take it. In Norway, it's more like you don't think that there could be another person in the way. So
right,
and also you don't look at people, so you have to look down, right, not to make any social contact or risk an actual interaction with someone.
Is that because it would make them uncomfortable?
Yeah.
What is it that's uncomfortable?
Or it could, it might, there it could be that they could be uncomfortable.
Even the possibility is too much.
Something like that.
Yeah. Right.
Except on Saturday evenings, I guess.
I don't go out a lot in Oslo on Saturday evenings, so I guess the lines are a little less straight.
Yeah, and the avoidance of social interaction is has also decreased.
Hmm. Returning to this in a future show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the outdoors, right? We have a lot of space. We have a lot of nature. We have a lot of enjoyable nature, even, and a lot
beautiful.
Of accessible nature and inaccessible nature. So from that, we also have a lot of, I called it obsessive training, running and hiking. Yeah.
Do you think that the obsessive training, running and hiking is just elicited by the fact that there's all this nature, or is it about something else?
I tried to sort of think about it a bit. I'm to be honest, I'm not sure. Because I'm tempted to say that there's something phenomenological going on, because the experience of being outside and doing some semi tough physical training or what have you, it's kind of, in a way, spiritual, perhaps?
I would say. It depends on you, I guess.
you don't get that experience in a fitness center.
No.
I think even doing yoga. So there's something there. And also perhaps it's a learned behavior. As mentioned, for I think a bit over 1,000 years ago, we found it. Oh, let's just row over the ocean and bugger those people over there, just for the heck of it, right? Isn't that obsessive training? I don't know.
That's very goal oriented, if nothing else.
And let's do some raping and pillaging, which is also maybe an outdoor activity.
I guess. I guess you can do it indoors
too
as well.
Soon? but yeah, and it could also have something to do with the sort of undertrained social thing. Like we get tired of other people, so we have to get away from them. And here's the weird thing, because as you perhaps has noticed, we don't say hi to each other in public space, right? If you sit beside someone on a bus, you don't say hi or talk with that person.
It would be weird from a British perspective if you did. Super weird.
Yeah. But if you go out into the woods or on the mountains, you always have to say hi to the persons. And even perhaps talk a bit with them. Perhaps about the weather. That's the thing you do outdoors.
Where is the line? Like, I go running in the park here, and it's a little bit wild, but it's not out of town. Do I smile at other joggers? I do that anyway.
No.
Sometimes they smile back. Not always.
Well, perhaps you could smile, but you it's not required to say hi. Oh, you wouldn't say hi to joggers in the park, because it's still an urban environment. But if you go into Oslomarka, like the forest outside Oslo, there you a bit into the tracks, then you will begin to interact and say hi and how's go with where are you headed, and stuff like that.
Okay, so once both parties agree that you've left civilization, it's basically okay to have a little conversation. Okay,
exactly.
Okay. Consensual wilderness title.
And my sort of lay explanation is that this is deep evolutionary stuff going on, because when you are outdoors, like in the mountains or in a forest, it's good to have that interaction, because then people will remember you. So if you don't return, people, that's right, I met that guy, he was on his way to X. Right. So I think it's sort of an evolutionary explanation there.
Someone will come for you, maybe.
Exactly.
Interesting. The nature of the, no pun intended, of the kind of exercise that people do outdoors is very interesting to me. So people run. People speed walk with sticks. It's probably not called speed walking here. It's probably a very fancy. Is there a fancy Norwegian name for it?
Kappgang.
What does that mean?
Speed walking. Well, kapp would be more in a competition sense, but yeah. And gang is walking.
Okay.
But this is the very specific activity of not having the 2 feet in the air. At once, so it always has to have feet on the ground.
Right, there are rules about this, right? Like if you're competitive for it.
And in my where I live now, there's this. I don't know on which level, but he was very good at it. But that was before the drug scandal. I guess we have to put a video of this, but it's. It's pretty distinct.
I have seen, probably slightly tangential, but I've seen what happens when the entire country is brought to its knees if someone is found to have taken drugs in a sport, right? It's not pretty. There's like national wailing and gnashing of teeth.
Especially if the person does something with skis.
Yeah. There's a hierarchy of drug taking in sport. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's running, Kapgang, and have you seen more?
Well, it's winter now, but when we got here, it was summer. And in summer, I go rollerblading. Not Norwegians. Norwegians road ski. And I'd never seen anyone road skiing before. It's awesome. I haven't got really close enough to kind of inspect a pair of these, but they're like very short skis with wheels on the ends, right? Like, that's basically it. And they go up and down the roads with poles. And we turned on the TV one evening in maybe July, August or something. And like, Norway's national sport is the biathlon, right? So skiing and shooting, the winter biathlon. And in the summer, they just do exactly the same thing, but they do it on road skis. So you've just got these people going round a course, stopping and shooting every once in a while, not at other people, like at these target things. There's like a whole thing and you've got to shoot all the targets accurately. And then you get up, you strap your rucksack on your rifle on your back, and you carry on your road skis and you go around the track, and then you come back and you shoot again. And this goes on for some time with cowbells.
With cowbells?
I think so. There were people kind of, you know, ding, 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 like you get in the skiing or anything else. Spectators.
Ah, like the supporters.
Yeah, yeah, not the actual people competing. I imagine that would just induce drag, if nothing else.
Well, we have a sickness, and the only cure is more cowbell, I guess. but yeah, actually, I didn't know that biathlon was our national sport.
I think it is, but I'm not sure.
Well, it may be. I'm sort of the last person to be an authority on sports, but yeah. Those skis, because people also use them like on the roads where there are cars, and I always thought them as wildly dangerous, because how can you stop on these things?
Right, up the hill at Holmenkollen. Yeah. There is a road skiing, like a kind of track that people can use. And there are all these signs on the fences that tell you, like, to be really careful that people are going by very, very fast. And it says explicitly, or there's a heavy implication at the very least, that these people are not going to be able to stop. And I'm like, how do they stop? Do they just fall down at the bottom of the hill? Like, how does it even work? It's not like you can do a snowplow or like a nice kind of stop on a pair of road skis, right?
Well, I think time and friction.
Yeah, but they'd be in the fjord by then.
Or perhaps, as you said, an uphill. You have to find an uphill.
Mm. Anyway, it's fascinating.
Have you observed more outdoor sports in the wild?
We live near the fjord, so you can see people sea kayaking, which is super cool, and something I want to do in the summer, or at least when the weather gets a bit warmer. That seems like a very Norwegian thing to do.
It is, and also pretty... Yeah, because then you will have this whole other sort of view on the nature from the coastline.
I used to kayak quite a lot.
Yeah. You know.
Super looking forward to it. I have to teach my husband how to Eskimo roll if possible, or at least how to exit a kayak without dying.
I'll do a half Eskimo roll.
The first half, and the second half is you bailing out, right?
Well, three-fourths, I guess. It's over the last part. That's the hard one.
Mm. It's in the hips. It's all in the hips. You got to flick.
As with Kapgang. There's a lot of hip action going on there.
You can only keep one foot on the deck of the boat at all times.
So, yeah, the thing with outdoor training, obsessive training, now it has been December, and I don't know about the UK, but in Norway, every newspaper are filled with, oh, now we have eaten for a month, now it's time to lose some goddamn weight. And... we all know that the fitness centers will be overfilled with ambitious fat Norwegians. but they will all have left come February. Failed on.
Is that really what happened?
The numbers say so. So there's a huge increase in like fitness memberships, and they all sell it for a year, right? So you have to do it. You have to pay for a year, but most of them they disappear come like February, March.
I think this is how gyms make their money.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. But do you have the same pattern in the UK?
Absolutely. If you are a regular gym member in the UK, January is always kind of trying because there's all these new people. It's like the like perpetual autumn or whatever it was called in about 97, where all the AOL users got on the internet and like just kind of crudded up the entire internet asking really dumb questions because it was, you know, their first day on the internet kind of thing. And it's a little bit like that. But yeah, they fade, some stick it out, I guess.
Do you do fitness centers?
I do. I haven't joined one. We were actually hanging off until January, so we're going to be those people, unfortunately, because we wanted to see if there would be any good offers. Because quite often, I think the fitness centers kind of say, oh, like if you join in January, you know, you get like a discount or something. I don't know. So we thought we'd try that.
Also, because I'm curious if there are cultural differences in fitness center culture from the UK and yeah.
Mm. Do you? I can't comment on that yet. We may have to come back to it unless you have been a regular gym member here and you can describe the kinds of things that people do, other than obviously use the machines and stuff.
Well, I haven't thought about it, so I'm not sure. I have to have something to compare it to, I guess. But well. It's a bit of a struggle with the social interactions again. That is, avoid it in a small place where there are lots of muscle and equipment.
Very British.
And also group, like it's group trainings.
I like people doing a yoga class, or
yeah, of course. But those people, they don't count. They are enlightened, and yeah, but also how to sort of optimize a room to get the most space between you and the next person.
Mm, like standing in the lift, right? You don't want to stand right next to someone if it's just two of you. So yeah, I get that. Yeah, it's uncomfortable to get on if there's 10 treadmills and someone is on number 9. You do not get on number 8 or 10. That would clearly just be quite wrong. Quite wrong.
But also, you have that, but also the need to sort of the implied competition. So you do not take the next treadmill, but you have to sort of be noticed that you probably are running faster and longer than the next person.
Are Norwegians very competitive in this way?
I think there are. Yeah, I think there are something going on there. Our first female prime minister actually said that it's typical Norwegian to be good. Typisk norsk å være god. So that sticks deep in our geist, I guess.
Good at anything in particular, or good at everything?
The last thing, I guess. Mm. I also think there were a pun intended in that.
Oh, to behave as well, Ovaragu, is that right?
Or to be not in the authority way, but more in the ethic way, right?
Mm. Yeah. Morally good.
Yeah.
Or morally compliant. Like to behave oneself in the sense of to follow a very narrow set of prescribed patterns.
I think Norwegians pride themselves on their history of being non-compliant. E.g. our history with Sweden and so on.
I was just going to mention Sweden.
Yeah.
I was. Did I say this in a previous podcast? I can't remember. that, like, in my head, the characterization of the difference between Norway and Sweden is that Sweden is responsible, grown up, they have a very boring job, probably in accounting. Sorry, any accountants listening. There goes our last listener. They have a very responsible job. They're very predictable, very safe, very sort of organized life. Norway is like their kind of their kid brother, who's kind of a little bit the black sheep of the family, and who sometimes disappears off to the forest for a week, and he comes back and he's perfectly fine. He might be covered in blood or not, but is that fair?
Yeah, it's pretty much spot on, I guess. But we have to ask a Swede.
Let's get a Swede on the show.
The Swedish showdown. Showdown, yeah. I don't think our listeners completely understand the deal with the Norwegians and the outdoors yet.
No, I feel like there's more there.
Is it just a tip?
I'm thinking about the going to the hytte.
Ah, the cabin. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is a whole thing.
Yeah, cabin life is a whole thing. I guess our first episodes will be a lot of foreshadowing for the next episode. This is like an academic paper, as I will soon elaborate on, and so on and so on. But yeah.
Is this the abstract still?
It's not uncommon that Norwegians have a hytte or a cabin, either on the mountains or by the lake or ocean side, where they, for some reason, spend a lot of their holidays. Before the cabin life, it should be sort of rudimentary, right? No electricity. You should have a utedo. Do you know what utedo is?
I think so. That's like the
it's a wooden porta pro, right?
Right. Like, you go out in the middle of the night, and how do you even find it? You know, like, if you've got to go, then
By the smell, I guess.
What is the obsession with it being as low-tech as possible? What's that about?
I think perhaps it can be sort of to remind ourselves of how good we have it back home in our highly DIY'd, optimized place, right? But
it's also kind of a self-sufficiency thing, though, right? Like, it feels like a point of pride.
Also, when you don't work, you have to suffer a little. it's a Protestant ethic. Something like that. Also, a self-inflicted crisis that does wonders for the family life.
You make it sound like there's nothing else to do but create family life.
I think perhaps people go with that ambition to create some family life, but go home with even more to argue about.
And mosquito bites.
Yeah, and that as well.
It sounds idyllic.
But now, after the whole petroleum adventure thing, people have installed Wi-Fi, like bubble baths, all sorts of highly luxurious things on their cabins.
Is there like a backlash?
It's like now it's more expensive to buy a cabin on the mountains than like a home in your typical city.
Yeah, why did this change? Why did people suddenly go, oh, you know what, okay, I'm not okay with, like, stumbling around outside at 2 a.m. because I got to take a shit, like...
Well, but they sort of still do, because they go to the expensive cabins, and then they go, like, outdoors hiking and shitting outside and getting sweat and stuff like that. And but then they return to their cabins with their like 16 head shower and massage chairs. So yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah. I have so many questions, I don't even know where to begin.
Because in the UK you don't do cabins, or you have cabins, but you have sort of, you may have a place in the, like the, I blank on the name, but,
Scotland?
Yeah, you may have a place in Scotland, in the Highlands. Where you can go hunting, and yeah.
It's pretty uncommon. Yeah. Almost always, if people are going to take like a week or something, and it would be a week normally, to go somewhere remote and go to a cabin, they're probably just renting it for like a week. It's not theirs. It's rare to own something. I'm thinking about the Czech Republic, where my cousins, my aunt and cousins, had a hutta. It wasn't called that. It's called a chata in Czech, obviously. But it's basically the same thing, right? It's super low-tech, and there's bunk beds, and there's no electricity, and, you know, your dinner is you make a fire outside and you cook a sausage over it, you know, like on a stick. But there is no UK equivalent, as far as I know. I think people just rent a place, and it costs quite a lot of money. You know, if you want to rent a nice cottage in the Lake District or in Scotland for a week or something, and it's not February, you pay a lot. Yeah, how much are these, like, how much is a cabin compared to the cost of a real house? You just said that some of the luxury ones are really expensive, but I guess, or is it a thing that you, your parents had, and so you just inherit it eventually?
Yeah, because you have those two modes, right? Like, you have the inherited cabin, but also if you, now you also can sort of build them on this like cabin areas. So there are sort of cities of cabins.
Like a ski village or?
Yeah, like that, all in wooden style thing. And those ones are pretty expensive, depending on the view and yeah, closeness to the ski center or yeah. I don't have the numbers, but if you're a listener and you are sort of looking for cabins, you can email us and I will gladly broker that deal for you.
For a small fee.
Right. I also will add a link to a cabin song.
Yes.
I guess sums up the thing.
If you need to know anything about cabins, I think it's probably in that song, based on my understanding.
Yeah, I guess also it should be mentioned that the cabin is, I think that's the, like where hygge comes from. It's a proto-hygge place.
Is that because there's no heating?
But there are heating. Most cabins has a wood stove or something.
Okay, so you can make fire.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is like a fire with flames. It's not like you turn on the central heating or anything.
Yeah, before at least. Now they have like pipings on the outside, so you don't have to shovel snow for your Tesla. So yeah.
The technology level collision in this is just blowing my mind.
Hmm.
I had more questions and they've just gone.
There's pretty much to think about. Well, some of our dear listeners had some, I don't want to call it complaints, but somehow I just did, about the length of our dear show. Keep it under 1 hour, please. We have already failed even cutting out the part where you spilled beer on your pillow fort. So I guess we just have to venture into the picks of the week.
I guess so. Let's talk about it.
Do you want to... I should begin this time because it's a nice... I had never pronounced that word out loud. Segway would be the American version, perhaps, but...
I think segway.
How do you do it?
Almost everyone I know has said segway, but you can say seg. But I think, like the thing, you know, with the wheels.
Anywho, I've chosen Bergensbahn, minute for minute. And this is a 7-hour and 14 minutes video of the train that leaves from Bergen and arrives in Oslo.
Is this slow TV?
This is slow TV.
Oh, I'm so excited.
For those of you who can't visit Norway, you can watch this on YouTube and get the experience.
Do you know enough about slow TV to be able to talk about it? I probably don't. But
not today.
Okay, we'll come back to slow TV. It's going on the list.
It will be featured in our special slow podcasting episode where we podcast for 12 hours, really, really slowly. So yeah, that's because since we have sort of an outdoor topic theme for this episode, I guess it would be apt to have Bergensbahn because there's lots of nature. So you get a sort of, you actually get a cross-section of the nature in Norway, one of them.
Beautiful. I have to ask, have you watched it all the way through?
No. Oh.
Integrity, it's called integrity.
But I will actually sleep through the trip in real life in 2 days, so yeah.
Okay. You're excused.
Your cultural pick of the week?
Yeah, finally. It's taken me so long to get here. Finally, I've seen the first season of Scum. I think this has probably been broadcast in other countries as well, but if you've not heard of it, it's how to describe. It feels really trivializing to call it a soap opera. It's more than that. It's... I think the first season might be 11 episodes, and they're about 20-25 minutes each, about young people in a videregående school, which is the school that you go to between the ages of, 15 and 18-ish? And about them and what they do, and they're doing what young people do, right? Like, they get drunk, they sleep with each other, there's some drug use stuff, they have, you know, relationship dramas, and it sounds... That is not selling it at all. It's really well-made television. The actors are great. The scripts are good. They do... There's a lot of just watching people do stuff. Like, it doesn't... They don't have to... There's not a lot of exposition. Sometimes there's a little bit, but there's not too much exposition. Sometimes you're just watching stuff happening to people, and you're left to make a lot of inferences about it and about how they feel about it and what they think. And that's great. That's really good. And it's really warm as well. Like, I guess we'll talk in a minute about the reception that this got, because it's, you know, it's shocking. It's showing kids, or some of whom are only like 15 or whatever, you know, having sex lives and doing stuff that probably their parents wish they weren't doing. And certainly the parents in the show apparently have no idea is happening. But it's done really affectionately. It's lovely. The characters are interesting and layered, and it's just super. And I've only seen season one, and there's two more, and I'm very, very excited to carry on. I'm like into the first part of season two, and it's just great.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff there, because, well, for reference, I guess it would be kind of in the same landscape as Skins, perhaps.
Which I never saw. In the UK. I'm told it's great.
For those who did. But more, I think, more down to earth and more, quotation marks, real. And what's different about it is that it's distributed every day. So every day in, like, within the seasons, they'll publish a short video clip, like 3 to 4 minutes. And every character in this show, or main character at least, also have a life in social media. So you can actually follow these people in Instagram or what have you. So they've made this whole universe, which seems pretty sort of real-ish. Which sort of, yeah, adds to the show, I guess. And it's not distributed internationally. It's actually only aired in Norway. I guess you could go in. I don't know if you can access it from outside Norway.
I suspect not, but we can put a link just in case.
Well, there are many fans outside Norway, and they pirate it and make subtitles even. So you can actually get Japanese subtitles for Scum if you want. So yeah, it's pretty interesting and exceptional for our standards that it has got this sort of popularity.
Can you say, I wasn't here when it first started airing, because that was like last year, right? Actually, last year before, 2 years ago now. Mm. What was the reception? Like, Scum is Shame, right? The title.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what was the critical reception, and were people shocked by what they were seeing?
No, I don't think any people were shocked, but it was interesting because so it's made by the public broadcasting company and sort of in the section for youth programming. And they didn't market it, really. So it got marketed organically in social medias as these characters. And it catched on among the youth first. And then it got a grown-up audience that recognized that there's quality here. And for us in the 30 and 40s, we can relate to these characters and understand them from our own upbringing, right? So for us, it got this sort of retrospective flair.
Right.
So, yeah. So since it gained traction among those guys who write the columns and sets the agenda, like in the newspapers, this discourse was actually that, are we making this uncool? Should we just leave it to the young people?
Yeah.
To let them have this themselves?
So, yeah, it suddenly becomes uncool, right? The moment that older people like it.
Exactly.
I guess if it's genuinely popular with young people, they've got the language right. Like, there's a lot of interesting talking going on where, for me as a non-native speaker, it's quite hard to just hang in there with the dialogue, but I wonder while I'm watching it, how echt is this? How real is it?
So it's set in the, I guess, the western part of Oslo, which I'm not too familiar with the contemporary youth way of speaking, but to me, it seems pretty realistic. So I think they do a lot of work to get it right. But what's surprising, because it's scripted. So there's no improvisation going on. Which it's surprising. because it seems so. But yeah. So I guess they do a lot of work to. So, yeah.
Yeah, it feels very fresh. It feels kind of unrehearsed. And the acting is great. So,
yeah, let's move on to word of the week.
Well, yours is back to our theme.
Yeah, I've picked friluftsliv. Friluftsliv. And this is one of the words that cannot be translated into English. A category of words I have a tiny issue with, the idea that something can't be translated, because by definition it can, but there's not a corresponding word that means exactly the same thing in English, I guess. And directly, it would translate it to free air life, or outdoor life, or being in the outdoors, I guess.
And does it relate to, is this like a philosophical, philosophical is not the right word, but is this like a, would you say someone has a Freiluftsleben, would it be talking about what they do when they're outside, or is it more a kind of philosophical approach to how to be, that one should be outside, or neither of those things?
I think it's a native category in the sense that it's deep in our cultural conscience, I guess.
Consciousness?
Yeah, in the cultural consciousness. And it's used a lot. But it's not a philosophy as so much as it's like articulated. You should do this and do this, and this would mean that and stuff like that. Of course, there are philosophies of friluftsliv, like Arne Næss, I guess famous Norwegian philosopher. If there are a famous Norwegian philosopher, he would be the one. he's done a lot of work on deep ecology and stuff like that. He would have philosophies of friluftsliv, but it's more a term that denotes things like outdoor sports, hiking, being or spending time in the nature and so on.
Nice.
So I will attach an article from the renowned journalistic adventure. Mother Nature Network, which have an article on how friluftsliv can help you reconnect with nature. Yeah.
I think going outside would be a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, and also I think it's a term that is tied with the Norwegian nation building project.
About which I know also, nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, we're coming back to that as well.
You will learn about that later, I guess. As will I.
Cool. My word is not as attractive. My word, and I'm probably going to pronounce this very badly, is jävlaskap. I came across
Should
this.
Should I do it?
Please.
Jävlaskap?
Yeah, oh, I made it Swedish.
Mm.
Jävlaskap. Got it. I don't know why.
Pretty good.
Thank you. I switched the L and the E. I went into Swedish mode for a moment. Right. This is a word I came across because one of our colleagues wrote a blog post. In fact, he wrote two, I think, and it was in both. And I looked at it and I understood roughly what it meant, and I could not come to an English language conclusion about what it meant except the word fuckery.
I think that's... Yeah.
But when I put it into Google Translate, I do not get that word back. I get nothing back, actually. Also, when I look in my dictionary, it's not there.
Huh.
Fuckery.
Yeah, but it's pretty established word. Can you explain it? Except fuckery?
Wait, you want me to explain fuckery in English, or you want me to explain jävlaskap in Norwegian? In English,
yeah,
obviously.
Well, I guess both.
Oh, man. Okay, we're going to have a whole other episode on swearing. So, I don't even have a good handle on jävel. Like, it's got a kind of, like, satanic kind of implication to me, but it's never translated like that.
Well, the jävel, that would be the devil.
Yeah. Like,
so if you put it in the definite conjunction, it would be jävelen would correspond to the devil.
Well, in that case, it's devilry, right?
Yeah.
Stuff crafted by the devil.
Yeah. perhaps more etymologically correct, but yes, but I think feckery is more, has the connotations.
Cool. Good word to know. Awesome.
I guess we should use these words in a sentence as you do in the spelling bee.
You first.
So jävelskap, you could ask vad är detta för något jävelskap? So what the fuckery is this?
Absolutely.
Or more like I guess in more in a questioning fashion would be one of the more used ways to use it.
Nice. Oh, so like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Or what the fuck is going on, kind of. Yeah.
So that, but also, like that, that's more in the phrase, the phrasing, but you can also, if you denote something as jävelskap, it would be, something bad. War could be jävelskap, or some war actions, perhaps.
If I think about the translation as devilry, it just sends me down the road of kind of 18th or 19th century Britain. What devilry is this? It's very...
It's more morally judgmental than from surprise. If we were to sort of shout out from surprise, it would be... you also have fanskap, which
that's
perhaps
fuckery.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Teaser for the swearing episode.
Mm. How about friluftsliv?
Friluftsliv. It's a word you could use in the Tinder of yesteryears, like kontaktannonser. When you place an ad for yourself in the newspaper, what's the term for that in English?
A personals ad would be the British one,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So you would use this in a personals ad as liker friluftsliv, I like the outdoor life. That would signify that you are a fit and an healthy person with interests.
And a good sense of humor, invariably. Is that a thing that people say here?
No.
Oh, that's going on the list.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Wow. That's a whole thing. Great. I'm just looking at the time.
We are failing on the time.
We're not failing. We're finding our groove.
Yeah. We have made references to the list or the show notes for a while. Where could people find the show notes if they are so inclined?
They can go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm and they will find all the things that we linked to, all the things that we've talked about, and other episodes as well if you haven't heard the other episodes. And also a link to our Twitter account, Småforskjeller, which is Small Differences in Norwegian.
And can you spell it?
You're going to do this to me. SMAFORSKJELLER.
All right. And also per listener request, we will add the word of the week in our show notes for once.
Yes, and we'll go back and we'll update that. Thank you, Jocelyn, who pointed out that it was very difficult to understand how things were spelled. Good call.
So I guess this was the one on the outdoors. I suspect it's a topic we might return to.
It seems likely. There's a lot of it.
But what should we do for next week? Should we talk about work?
I think we should talk about work. I'm not back at work until Wednesday, but I think it's a good time of year to talk about the workplace and work and what happens at work in Norway, some of which things are different than happen in the UK. We should definitely talk about that next week.
Exciting. Yeah, and the only thing left is to do our proper sign-off.
Okay. Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.
Ha det.